Here's my, and you can take this as a rhetorical question or just a regular question. I think it's topical, and we don't have to use any specifics. We talked about when Colin O'Mara was in here about, like, endorsements. What's an endorsement? Should we be endorsing? Why are we endorsing? Vis-a-vis the Working Families Party endorsement. We hashed that out already. Going forward, as a interested member of these groups that do the reviewing and endorsing, I'm extremely concerned that the endorsing and reviewing has a lot to do with, like, can they win or do something? Can they change a number from this to that? Then whether or not they are potentially someone who would support, say, democratic socialist ideas or working ideas that would help working families in Delaware. And so that's what I'm trying to suss out right now. It's like, do we have, like, are we just trying to sort of set a minimal standard so that we can endorse people and we can think about, like, how to get them, like, elected to the General Assembly? Or does that person have to, like, you know, be a democratic socialist? Comrades and friends, hello. We're in the shadow of Rockford Tower. We're behind enemy lines. We're in the belly of the Delaware Way beast. This is Rob. This is your Highland Spunker podcast. You've already heard the 300th episode. You know we're on a fucking roll right now. What you don't know, or only some of you know, not enough of you know, there's 40 minutes, approx, 35 minutes of bonus Steve Wood conversation that's going to go out, that has been gone out over the weekend. So if you're a patron of the podcast, you can listen to that. That's our little pitch. Joining tonight to talk about a variety of issues are City Council member Sinead Darby. Hello.
Hello, how y'all doing?
I'm feeling good. I have something that I definitely want to talk to you about, but we can all get on it, but I'll hold that thought. A member of the board co-chair, some kind of chair. Co-chair of the Delaware Democratic Socialists of America, Jonathan Tate. Hello.
Hey. Hope everybody's doing well.
Of course, super producer Carl is here. And we're going to give you the podcast. So the story that I wanted to tell was that I was in the Justice of the Peace Court today. The protester that was arrested outside of John Carney's home, Colleen Hilton, it's public record, hero, as we know. Her case was dismissed today. She had a public defender in the Justice of the Peace Court. They made her do the whole thing. And they took it all the way to a trial. And the city solicitor bobbled and weaved. I don't think he was used to the trial setting. And we got a good result. And I tell that story just to make sure that we're all sort of like, whatever we talk about, we all got each other's back. I think people are starting to understand that. I don't know. We're getting there. Sinead, can you start us off with a little bit of a background about the noise ordinance and your because I saw it, read it, sort of understood what it was, and then sent you a text message, and I was like, hey, I'm going to come to this committee thing tonight. You're like, is it the Nathan Field thing? And I was like, okay, you know what it is. But then your argument at the hearing was extremely interesting too. But like, can you give us like a blow by blow? Like what? How did you find out about it? And what conversations did you have about it? Because the conversation you have with Nathan that is on the record now that you mentioned it is extremely funny.
Yeah, so I'm on the public safety committee. So I was like, oh, a noise ordinance. Okay. I read it. I didn't like connect it to like protesters. Like that was like the last thing on my list. So Nathan calls the day before that Monday. Well, he texts me. He's like, hey, you have a few minutes to talk. I'm like, yeah, I'm free at this time. You know, he said, I want to talk about my piece of legislation. So he gets on the phone and I just listen because I'm just listening to like, what could this noise ordinance be about?
Yeah, I mean, right, his district is like around the trolley square, so you might think that that would be about like bars or
yeah, I'm sitting there thinking like, okay, what could he be talking about? And when he starts talking, the first thing he says out his mouth is, "This is about the protesters," like literally. So as soon as he said that,
does he not realize who you are? Like
that's what I was just like.
Does he not realize that might not be the best strategy to get you to support?
He's talking to the wrong person. So I didn't say anything. I just listened. I listened, and he went on about how they're disturbing people, how he thinks is violent. They're yelling out things that he thinks are very negative and obscene. So he's going on and on, and I said, Nathan, this is not the right thing to do. I said, I think the best thing for you to do is to use your privilege and power from your position and your identities to work with Senator Coons so that he doesn't continue to fund genocide. I said, it's not about trying to limit the way people protest or wear. I said, that's the wrong way to go. And he was like, oh, well, that's another conversation. I just need to make sure the people who live in my district don't hear the protesters. And I was like, so where do they protest then? He said, they need to go to the office. I said, Nathan, do we go to our office? Like, how many times are we really in our office? I said, it would be a pointless protest. So for me, that's how I found out. And that's what I knew. So then as soon as I hung up the phone, I'm in a few group chats. And I immediately said, this is about y'all. And then I emailed Nathan and I sent the nice email to him. And I told him I need him to basically stand on business in front of these people he's talking about. I said, you need to, and I want you to stand on everything you said tonight in front of these protesters. So I sent him a nice email. I made sure, like, you know, all the public safety committee people were on there. And I said, you're going to have a lot of visitors tonight, Nathan. And I want you to say this in front of all of them. I'm going to bring up the email I sent them. So that's pretty much how it happened. And once the word got out, it just spread.
Yeah, I think
I found the email.
Oh no! I mean, you don't have to read the whole thing. You can quote any choice nugget if there's something in there that you particularly enjoy.
Because
I'll tell you that when I first read it, like you're going to read these sort of like ordinance changes in a committee hearing all the time and just sort of scan it and be like, oh, noise ordinance, this thing, whatever. When I saw it, because I never look at that stuff, and I know somebody's sending that to me for a very good reason. And so I saw it directed at a personal residence and I was like, oh, they're trying to get them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, they're trying to get them.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty much how it happened. And then the people came out and they put pressure and he thought he had enough votes. And a lot of city council people flip flopped when it was time for that vote. What, on the 20th, a lot of people flip flopped. And then that night before it's like 7-8 o'clock at night. I get a call from my chief of staff and she's like, Chris Johnson was to put out a statement that he's so happy the legislation is being held. I was like, what are y'all talking about? Like I didn't even know what they were talking. I started checking my email thinking I missed something. Like, I didn't know it was being held. I didn't know those things were happening.
You're just making it up.
Yeah, so I was like, what? Let me check my email. What happened? So then Chris Johnson decided that he wanted to put out a press release basically saying that it was being held and that he didn't support it. So I just put my name on it. I was like, yeah.
Good. Yeah, I saw that. Fine. Thank you for that.
But, yeah.
And shout out to Chris for that as well.
Yeah. I mean, we get on him a lot. We just did because of some other things
reasons.
He did for valid reasons. But it was interesting, like, the next day when I sent some information to people who were sort of tracking it, that it was like, you know, a couple messages and like the Chris Johnson press release. That was like the one thing that went out.
It was so random.
I was like, it was random.
I didn't expect it. Like, honestly, I did not expect it. When I got the call that night, when they said it was Chris Johnson leading it, I was just like, okay. Because I honestly thought he had enough votes. Like, I thought he had enough votes, and I thought that certain people were definite going to be yeses based on who was co-sponsors and who voted out the legislation.
Yeah, I remember, like, I think it was the day before it came up for a vote. Yeah, it was the day before. Yeah, because that was Juneteenth, because I was on my way down to Newark, and I remember calling Maria Cabrera to basically to urge her to vote against it. And
she was going
to
vote yes.
Yeah, but she was like, yeah, this was like terribly written, like, you know, yada yada.
Oh, really?
Yada.
Well, I think the point is, I don't know what you guys think, because I would say any conversation you had at that point is mostly like Chris sends a thing out that it's being held, but nobody thinks it's held. And Maria's like, yeah, you know, on second thought, it's badly worded. That sounds suspicious to me. Mm-hmm. However, what I know happened is what Shanae said. Shanae said, by the way, there's going to be a lot of people at the hearing tonight. We actually ran out of chairs. Kiki had to stand. I asked Kiki, do you want to sit down? She said, hell no. So I think the moral of the story is, to me, people are going to show up. Now, this organizing around this has been a big deal because, you know, there's kids under rubble in buildings that we still don't even know how bad it is. So this is the acute problem now, but organizing is going to continue, and it's going to make a difference. I think it made a difference here because it just put enough pressure on people to have to just be like, oh yeah, I'm going to put out a press release, like a completely random thing.
Yes.
So I just think it's cool.
Yeah. No. It's always good when you can confront someone that's really just a real, like, corporate schmuck like Field is, and just absolutely run up his guts in a standing room only crowd.
Yeah, it's just such a targeted sort of, like, I mean, you couldn't make a story more targeted than like targeting a person in the richest neighborhood probably the richest neighborhood in Wilmington. And literally four of their neighbors around the corner, like, and literally rewrite the law for people that live on one of the richest blocks in the city. That's wild to me.
I agree. And I was just like, out of all the inconveniences, as they called it, that our city is plagued with.
Right. No, I was thinking about that too. Like,
wait, let Shanae finish.
Like, this is what you're standing on? Like, this is it? Like, I was just like, this is it? Because in my email, I said, what we are inconvenienced by in Wilmington is gun violence, rising water costs and rent, not addressing homelessness, not enough affordable apartments being built in the city, old white men trying to maintain power over a black city, high poverty rates, no investment in Wilmington students, etc. And didn't you vote no to some of those bills or have been silent on those issues? So for me is, you're talking about y'all are being inconvenienced by people protesting outside, but there are people who children go to bus stops and they have to hear gunshots. I'm sorry. I don't feel sorry for your plight. I'm just being honest.
I just want to say this. Namdi, you dodged a fucking bullet, my friend. For real. No, because it's nonsense. It's really, when you put it in that perspective, it's complete nonsense.
Like,
I mean, I'm just thinking back in terms of, I mean, we grew up like 9 blocks from each other, I think, mm-hmm. on the north side. You know, there was plenty of noise, you know, whether it was gunshots or, you know, even much more common than that, just, you know.
Just noise.
People driving way too fast without mufflers. You know, did the city ever put up speed bumps on our streets? No. Like, did they ever bother to do anything about that noise? No. But it's like when it's, you know, the wealthiest neighborhood, when it's the people that have the most power in the city, you know, then it's like, oh, we got to drop everything and, you know, solve the minor inconvenience of, you know, people loudly protesting a genocide.
Right. And it was like how many blocks radius? And they were going to apply a few block radius problem to a whole city. So that means protesting at anyone's home at that point within the limits of the city of Wilmington would not have been allowed at that point. Right. Or you would have to just do a visual and stand there with a candle because you can't make noise. The whole point of a protest, like when I was talking to, when I wrote him, I said the point of a protest is to cause a disrupt, to disturb. If you and your residents want the protesters to stop, please pressure Coons to stop voting to fund genocide. But no, you and your neighbors want to limit their rights, all because you have been inconvenienced. Must be tough waking up with thoughts of a genocide happening. Like, be for real, Nathan. Like, and I don't know if he listens to this. I don't know if Nathan listens to the podcast. I don't know if he tunes in. But Nathan really needs to wake up. Right. And a lot of his constituents actually reach out to me about the Gibraltar thing. Like, he won't even take a stance on the Gibraltar. Like, he doesn't even have enough to take a stance. They're calling me. Like, they're calling me in the 8th district saying, Councilmember Darby, what can you do? Are you willing to use your voice for Gibraltar? Because I think Gibraltar, even though it's in the 8th district, I think it represents Mayor Mike Przycki and his coons and his people of, like, going to different neighborhoods and just brodying with development without community input, right? And I just think it's like Nathan Fields doesn't take a stance on anything.
Well, I want to say this as a constituent of District 8 here in the bunker. Where we are, you don't know. Just trust me. We're in the district. We're watching. We're not sending our best to city council. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and if anyone is considering primarying Nathan Field, please email delaware.socialists@gmail.com. We will be happy to send you a questionnaire.
That's an interesting point, because I was just at the trial today of our friend to lend support. Man, this is a big shout out to Alex Schaefer, the public defender. Everybody was surprised that this was going to go to trial, and I don't think the city solicitor was sort of used to the trial setting. Now, it's just in front of a judge, right? Just it's not a jury trial. But the we'll just say this. I'm not going to say any names, but the class of attorney, the difference in class was clear. Last week we talked to an attorney who has full riz. This was a really a master class in just like, why am I here? Why am I the one telling you this? This is sloppy nonsense. And then literally there's like she objected to the second cop taking the stand. One police lieutenant gave all the testimony. They showed some body cam footage, all of this stuff. They brought out the speaker that they were playing. Put it on the table. They try to call a second cop on grounds that it would be like redundant, and she cites the case law that they can't call this other cop. And the judge is like, "Yeah, I'm gonna sustain that." And it's like, oh boy. And already she had objected to testimony of the first cop. Because the cop who actually like did the most of the interaction didn't show up. So he was gonna give hearsay evidence, and she was like, no, that's actually not how that works. I'm gonna have to object for hearsay. He's like, okay. And so at the very end, he sustains the motion and will not let the other cop testify. The city solicitor sits there for a second or a minute. Says the defense rests. Okay, defense rests. But it was just like that, like in the middle of nothing. And then there's a silence for a minute. And Alex looks at the judge and she says, Your Honor, did the defense rest? She's like, he says, yes. She goes, okay, well, I'm going to make a motion to set aside. She makes this motion, this legal motion, just like, this is, they didn't point out who the person was in the courtroom. This evidence is this and that and other thing. This is ridiculous. And the judge is like, well, there's still the disturbing the peace citation that I guess could be charged, but I'm just going to dismiss all this right now. And that was it. Everybody got up and left. It was incredible. So a big shout out to Alex.
Yeah, shout out to the judge for having some common sense discretion there too.
Again, here's the thing. So I'm glad you brought that up, because we talked to Steve about that in the 300th episode. But we've talked about that for a lot of different stuff we've done. We covered we tried to cover the Fox Dominion suit, or I was there one day with Judge Eric Davis. We covered Kathy v. Kathy. We covered Samuel Waters' trial, the cop. I was there for the McCall trial. all of the judges and even the juries and every, they've all been at every level very good. We've seen Supreme Court arguments. It is very impressive, even as a somebody who criticizes everything. This judge in JP20, I wrote his name down, but I don't have it at hand. Great, ran like an hour and a half trial, lickety split, dismissed it. We all got up, took a selfie outside, fucked off. It was great. So yeah, good shout out to that guy for having, as you said, like the rationality to be like, yeah, this doesn't sound right. Shanae, can you get Velda Potter on here?
I could.
I thought you could. I've called her a couple times and left a message at the number she gave me. But, you know, I understand. But I talked to Kiki. Actually, I talked to Kiki after the committee hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about this. I was like, Kiki's like, you know, I've been saying, do it like a podcast. Hanif said the same thing. I'm like, well, can somebody tell her to return my call? Because I'd love to have... Because, you know, number one, I'm a big Carney hater. That's well known. That's established. Okay. I can't escape that.
But, yeah, he just got the first veto override in, was it like 47 years or something in Delaware?
Here's what I didn't understand. This is a good thing. We'll bash Carney in a minute.
Sounds
but,
good.
But on a technical matter, remind me what happened did the marijuana go back? And then they just voted it again, and a couple people changed, and then he pocket vetoed it, and it passed. So that wasn't a veto.
Right. So in Delaware, it's not like with the president. In Delaware, with the president, if he stuffs it in his desk drawer for 10 business days, then it's a veto. In Delaware, if the governor does that, then it passes.
So he actually vetoed the bill. Do you want to explain what the bill was, by the way?
Oh, yeah. So there was... So there was two bills that related to a big fight that was just won yesterday by the, or I guess technically fully just won today, by the state retirees. So the Carney administration was basically trying to like privatize the state retiree healthcare system by putting all the retirees on Medicare Advantage, which is terrible and a scam, et cetera, et cetera. So in response to that, I believe it was two falls ago in 2022, the legislature went into an emergency special session and like passed legislation to, you know, at least temporarily, you know, halt this. And then there was a bunch of meetings with the State Employee Benefit Commission. And out of that came, two bills, one of which essentially, you know, banned any privatization for, you know, any retirees or current hires, you know, up through the end of 2024. That was one that Carney essentially pocket passed and didn't, like, he didn't sign it, but he let it become law. And this was passed, by the way, unanimously out of all 62 legislators of both parties, you know, in a real repudiation of Carney. And then the other bill, which he did veto, essentially would have reformed the State Employee Benefit Commission so that the governor wouldn't get to, the governor under this version would have a lot less power over the appointees. And that was what Carney vetoed, and it was yesterday and today the veto was overridden, in both the House and the Senate, so it still becomes law, also unanimously. And this is, like I said, I believe this is the first time a Delaware governor's veto has been overridden since 1977.
I read that it was a very long time.
Yes, longer than me or Shanae have been alive.
Not me.
Not you.
Fucking turning 50 in September, folks, and I'm still come at you. You know, Nurse Susan's like, look, your eyes, they're all fucked up, and I'm like, well, I want to get in a couple more fights before I'm go blind, and I can't fight at all. So, yeah, I think the cool thing about this is that this is one of those things where if you don't understand it or you didn't kind of follow it, you know, you wouldn't understand what a repudiation it was. You know, the Carney, Saron Cade, DeMatteis, who am I?
Geisenberger.
I forgot. Geisenberger. If I forgot Geisenberger, Kowalko would never speak to me again. if it these guys had an idea to privatize pensioners' health care, and the state stood up and said, fuck you, we're not doing it. As a matter of fact, we're going to change the way you did this so you can't fucking do it. How do you like that? And he was like, well, we're not going to be able to control health care costs. Well, I have a couple ideas to control health care costs. Want to try those? No, you don't. So this, nobody wants to do this one. Try again. And shout out to Cuoco, to John Flattery, to Karen Peterson, and
Paul Baumbach too. I mean, he was the prime sponsor.
God damn it, you're right. I know, but I'm not feeling Paul right now. It's fair though. Fair point. Paul did. You're right, because Paul was behind the scenes and kind of was like able to push this. When they did that emergency session. So you know
what? Yeah, he was the one sitting in those meetings with like all of those like Carney henchmen that you mentioned earlier.
Jonathan, let me tell you something. I hate you for this. But I'm going to begrudgingly, again, for the second time tonight, give Paul Baumbach a shout out. Even though I saw what he did for 313, the corporate bill, was just... Paul... I'm glad you went out with a smile, and I'm glad, you know, you're a good dude, you know. But that, man, that corporate thing, you could have gone out on a high, and you just capitulated, defaulted. Oh, we don't like that. I had to say that because I gave you two compliments, because he made me give you a compliment, so. Okay, so now we're going to circle back. I'm going to get... Sinead's idea first, and then we'll go to the people who matter, who actually do this shit. So at the beginning, I was like, here's the way I'll say it. You listen to what I said at the beginning. I feel like we're setting the bar too low. Like, I feel like we have to endorse six people, or we have to endorse, like, we got to endorse the person who's going to win, or the person who's, like, the furthest whatever left, or this person or that person, because of their, for political reasons. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's not a good standard. I feel people like should be begging for our fucking resources, and they better be fucking good. This is again one of the reasons why I had a critique of Colin O'Mara's endorsement from the Working Families Party at Delaware, because I feel like I feel like there's political decisions being made that have nothing to do with our project, and I think we should be more careful and judicious with how we give it away. What do you think?
I agree. I know I'm not going to publicly endorse someone without vetting them, even if I might like them a little bit or personally like them. I know for me this hurts dearly, but when Eugene was running, I liked Eugene personally, but politically I could not support him. Like, I would have never openly endorsed him.
You and I both.
So there was three things. He accepted the endorsement from John Carney. He didn't speak out against Palestine, and he accepted money from BPG. And for me, when someone is, I feel like compromises their character just to get somewhere, I can't support it. But I can still care about you as a person and all those other good things. So no, I'm not I personally will not just endorse anyone. There's some people I support behind closed doors, but I would never openly say it because I know they don't completely align. So I would say we should be, and I also think endorsement should be more local. I think it should be like school board, city council level.
Well, I mean, DSA's been doing that.
Yeah, and that has mm-hmm. happened too, and the Working Families Party's done that too. But so no, I wonder.
But I think the Working Family Party is more state focused.
Well, let's see. First of all, let's cover that. That's a great question. My first question was going to be, like, is a organization like the Democratic Socialists of America in Delaware or Working Families Party, are they what percentage are they part of the project, and what percentage are they political? Because I'll give you an example. Well, you know what? I'm not going to...
What do you mean?
I'll tell you exactly what I mean. I'm not going to use names here. But we were commenting on some people who are getting an endorsement soon. Just say that.
Potentially.
The people who are being considered for an endorsement from these organizations. Again, we're not making specifics. They're not movement people, number one. They're not. They're going to do shit Paul Baumbach does. He's not a movement person. Like, he's fine. He's good. But, like, does every good Democrat get an endorsement? That's my question. My other point being, I've seen some of this. And I felt a certain kind of way about the Colin O'Mara endorsement from Working Families Party. I feel differently now because we talked it out. And maybe I didn't do my, as a member of the organization, didn't do my due diligence. So I was actually thinking about coming on the DSA call this weekend to voice my opinion. And to make sure then basically none of them get endorsed. Because again, I don't know how much... Well, I don't know how much some of these people are going to do for the movement that we're trying to do. So I don't understand. Like, I know that there's math, there's legislative math, as they say. But we've been doing the legislative math for like 6 years. And, you know, Carrie Harris sucks now. Like, what, the Senate's good, I guess. But the House still stinks. The Senate actually still stinks when you think about what they did with the corporate side. You know, we're counting on Kyle Gay and Brian Townsend. I mean, it's a fucking joke. That's what I think. Because I don't believe in this. I'm not persuaded. So I'll just say this, and then I'll let you guys talk. I'm getting less and less persuaded by the legislative math argument. That's how I'll put it.
You're good. I was about to say, I disagree with you really quick. I agree with you on that, because I think about, I was in the first like cohort with Working Family Party of people who were getting like endorsed. And some of those people who were a part of like this cohort or the first round, like now when I look at their record, I'm like, I can't believe we even endorsed them or that they were a part of it. And I think of them and I'm like, they are not for movement. They got caught up into the Delaware way. They got wrapped up into like just playing it safe. So I definitely agree with you on that.
So I guess, like, I don't necessarily, like, what do you mean by if someone is a movement candidate? Like, that they're involved in, one of the people that's up for an endorsement is literally on the DSA Delaware Steering Committee. Like, I don't know how much more movement.
Well, that person, again, I wasn't talking about particular people. Just to be clear about that.
Right, like, but you said you wanted to vote no on every single person.
I didn't want to. Again, I was trying to not be. I said that to not be specific. There's not that many. I just didn't want to say like. I didn't want to make it sound like.
But I went to one DSA meeting, and there was this guy running. I can't remember his name from Newark, and they were They were considering endorsing him. And I was asking him questions, a lot of questions. And I was sitting here thinking, like, how did he even make it here? Like,
You posed a question, and I'll answer it. A movement person, I'm so glad you asked, because there's one sitting right there. That's one. There's one that sat there many times, as Shanae has sat there many times, Medina. Medina Wilson-Anton obviously is a movement person. You know, there's a few people that are trying, they have a project they're trying to do. They're not trying to be happy and make everybody happy. They're not trying to make sure that nobody ever has a bad word to say about them, because they don't care. Because they have a different project. And I think those are the people that we need to find and endorse, and that our endorsement should be judiciously made and only for those type of people. Does that make sense?
I would say that, like, I mean, I just can't think of anybody that's been. Yeah, I'm not saying that like everybody who's gotten like the DSA or WFP endorsement is like, you know, oh, like, you know, I like agree with that in hindsight. But I wouldn't really say that.
But you did it at the time for political reasons. That's the whole point I'm trying to make. When you look at it in hindsight, you have to learn the lesson that you fucked up. And it was like it didn't make sense.
I think we messed up on some endorsements.
And I'm not, again, I'm trying to rethink. Carl, I want to give you an opportunity.
Like Kyle Gay. I'm
speak your, Carl, speak your piece.
Wait, who? I don't think we didn't endorse.
No, Carl's
no,
now.
We,
as a,
no, we didn't.
Both of you.
Family Party endorsed. Wasn't she in?
Wait a minute. Carl's going to
support. No, she wasn't.
Carl is going to.
No,
Carl's going to speak his piece. Go.
All right. I mean, I'm going to be contrarian here. That's usually your thing, but I'm going to do it here, which is like, you say that we're making these endorsements for political reasons, and I was under the impression that we're trying to do politics.
Okay.
So, yeah, we do make endorsements for political reasons. And sometimes that political reasons is because we think that someone is going to be a champion, like a Shanae, like a Medina. I'd say like this time around, we're looking at like a Brandon Fletcher.
Yes.
Like someone who is like someone who's been very vocal in the movement for years and years and years. Medina's been organizing for Palestinian rights since college. Shanae had started Black Muslim Power even before she, I think, was thinking about running, and been doing Network Delaware stuff before. And I'm sure others, I'd have to go back and, I don't have everybody's bio right off the top of my head. And then like Brandon has been doing stuff on the house.
I think what I was saying is there are definitely
people. So yeah, and so that's one reason.
Those are the people I'm talking about.
And I think that is someone that we should absolutely be endorsing and be investing in. But, you know, I think your point about the legislative math game and that like it has not bore out, but the reason it hasn't bore out is because the math doesn't add up yet. Like,
right.
We have not endorsed enough people that have won that have gotten to the a majority of the Democratic caucus, certainly in the city council, but also even in the state house.
Well,
Evelyn Harris?
We did not, no.
No, we endorsed her last cycle.
And like, not to say that I think everybody who we have endorsed has been perfect in every way, but I think there's part of it. One is that like political endorsements have political decision making behind them, and like you have to consider a combination of like who are going to be our champion and who are going to be our sort of like battalions behind those folks. But then I think the other thing is we are talking purely about politics purely as an endorsement or not endorsement game and how we do things in elections. And I think the one thing that I've really learned from doing this for the last 4 years is that the election is just the first step of the process to actually make things happen, because the things that happen afterwards and the dynamics that play out in the legislature or in the city council after people get elected have huge effects. And that's something that I don't think we've fully figured out, because I think a lot of people, and Sinead can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think any of the people who got elected for the first time in 2020 were necessarily champions, but I think there's a lot of people who probably came in and you're expecting like, oh, they will, you know, they're not going to be champions, but they certainly won't be awful, but maybe have turned out to be awful. And I think that goes for state house as well. Like if you look at Carrie, someone who like obviously was very much a movement, and she, and I was doing all the editing for the early episodes, and she was in a lot of those early episodes. Yeah. I don't have anything against her personally nowadays, but like obviously she's not someone that we would consider in the way that she has acted in the state house to be a movement.
And I think of her sort of in the same way that Shanae described Eugene, and I think about Eugene the same way too. These are my friends, are going to be my friends. I mean, what Eugene and Drew did pulled me into this, you know, kind of started the big movement for me. So I get that.
Same for me, Eugene.
Yeah, of course.
Carrie, for me.
Yeah, and I get that. But we have to face the facts that Eugene hooked his wagon to the people that we talked about that wanted to privatize pensioners' health care. That's who he hooked his wagon to. Now, again, he did that in context, but, you know, I'm not going to fucking stand for that because it's not movement. It's not movement oriented.
I mean, I guess like my
Carrie,
thing,
oh, the ahead. Same thing with Carrie. Carrie was a radical candidate for a number of reasons. Created a huge buzz here. In my opinion, beat Carper in the debate that I went to. Went ahead and fucking some beers with Dave Weigel afterwards. It means a lot to me. But now she's on the Pete Schwarzkopf train, doing the shit Pete Schwarzkopf did. That's how Val's there. So we just have to call. We just have to call it like it is. Like you said, I don't mind making the mistake, but I feel like you got to learn from the mistake. And to Carl's point, and then I'll let you go. I'm only arguing about that narrow bit because there's definitely a lot of electoral stuff that I'm completely behind. You mentioned Brandon Fletcher, guy's fucking awesome. But I just feel like there's some fringe people that get a lot of your time and a lot of your resources that we could probably do something else with it.
Yeah.
Like who?
I mean,
I said I wasn't going to name names, and I'm not.
So you name names
after the
yeah. Well,
you name you name yeah. you name Carrie's name. So I'll speak on that. And like, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, she's chosen to, you know, like go into leadership and do what she's doing. And, you know, as a result of that, yeah, I don't necessarily know if we'll, you know, endorse her again this cycle or not. That's up to the membership. I am just one vote in that.
Does she still attend meetings? Is she still in
contact? Did she still ask for your endorsement?
She said that she would when I last saw her. I don't know if she hasn't officially.
Well, I'm gonna as a member of the Delaware DSA chapter, I'm going to give my vote now. I'm a no.
Okay.
I don't even need to see any documentation.
Okay.
I'm going to be a no on that.
I guess...
I'm going to be a no on that, dog.
Okay. And, like, that's fine. You're entitled to your
opinion.
Right.
That's my one vote.
But like, I guess my counterfactual to that is like, you know, would you rather have people like Kerry in there, or would you rather have people like Larry Mitchell as the House Majority Whip? Because if you just want to like cut
anybody
off, at this
point, I don't see the difference. You're going to be hard pressed to make an argument that there's a difference.
So
right
what?
Now.
Yeah. So her being in that seat, what difference? How?
What,
has the, it
what fucking difference?
Like
has
I'm
it made?
Like I'm being like I don't know. So I'm.
Well,
asking.
I mean, make an argument
for what Kerry Harris has done that really made a difference.
That
differentiated
I don't
herself from Larry Mitchell. Give me in.
And I mean, even... she's not against like the homeless bill of rights for one. I mean, she's not like backed by the FOP and like, you know, giving cops every single thing they want. Like, I'm not like, I agree. Like, she's not a Medina clone, you know, and like, you're not like wrong for calling that out. But I guess like my thing is just like, you know, would you rather, you know, Maybe we need to set the bar higher, and we've tried to do that stuff with, you know, setting up endorsement questionnaires.
You raise a good question. Let me.
But it's like, would you rather, like, are you only going to support Medina clones against, like,
what I'm saying is we
really
spend,
conservative people?
Here's what I'll say, and I hope that this might go to sort of Carl's point, too. I think what I'm trying to say is we spend too much fucking time just making these decisions when we could be spending time doing something else, because I think we spend too much. I'm going to say it, and you can keep it in. You should beep it out because I promised somebody that I would not do this, but I'm going to fucking do it right now. And you talked about stuff in hindsight. Like, do you think it was good to endorse? I didn't want to get specific because I knew we could do this. We could literally do this all night. And I guess my point is that at some point, we're having trouble sort of, I think we kind of recognize the L's, but we don't put that into practice. We don't kind of put it into practice. We're like, we're going down. We took this L, that L, that L, that L. That was the wrong person. We did that wrong. But then we go and we endorse 9 people again. We should be endorsing like 3 fucking candidates that are fucking good, and we create an army of everyone behind everybody.
But I think we go to the back to you. I think your conversation is, do we want to? I think you're asking, do I want to work on fire or glass? And I don't want to do either. So when you say like you rather this or rather that, when they're both not good for me, I'm voting. I'm just going to be. I'm good.
Because we're not talking about our vote. Like, I understand sometimes, like somebody in Pennsylvania might decide they're going to vote for Joe Biden, and that's what they do. That's fine because it is a binary choice as a vote. That's how you might think of an election when you go into the booth and you fucking push the button or whatever you do. But that's not what you guys are doing. You guys are making decisions to make public endorsements from groups and organizations that have, to your great credit, organization behind them and an apparatus that you can bring to bear, both publicly and with people, and by brand. Good brands, in my opinion. And so there's something else there. You don't have to give that away because that's a better candidate or that's a preferable candidate. You don't have to give your brand away like that, I don't think. I think Sinead doesn't think so either.
I think
we're on the same side on this.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Yeah, it's a good 2v2, like tennis. but yeah, I mean, I think, because I'll reference a point that was made when we just beeped out the last 4 minutes or so before this. but I'll try to bring it up in outside.
You might have
of
to play like an alarm, like whoop,
yeah,
whoop.
Yeah. Which I think my thought on this, and others may disagree, but I don't think there is a like binary switch that people have that goes between establishment on one side and movement on the other. I think there is a spectrum, and there are some people who are all the way on the one side. You got your Sinead's, your Medina's, and there's people who are all the way on the other side. You got like your Pete Schwarzkopf's and your, you know, Val Longhurst types. And then I think we endorse, and I think the question that we then need to ask is like, what, and this is getting very visual for a podcast, but like,
yo, I did notice, even my, I can't even see, yeah, but across the room, your motherfucker's doing this
of
and
like
that and all
gesticulating,
all kinds of
how
shit.
How wide is this sliver on the
left
movement side of things that we are willing to consider? And I think when we have these conversations for Working Families Party, it is a political decision about like, in certain cases, like if we can get rid of Val Longhurst, Even if you replace Val Longhurst with another Val Longhurst, which is not the case with Kamala, I think, at least based on my experience with her. But, like, having a Val Longhurst with power and then replacing that person with a Val Longhurst who's out of power, that benefits us in a whole lot of different ways that have nothing to do with that particular election. So when we talk about, like, political decisions, that's what I'm talking about with, like, political decisions. And so maybe our swath is going to be wider there.
That's a decent one.
So that's one part of what I was saying is, like, you know, that switch of, like, that spectrum from establishment to movement that we're broadly talking about right now. And then the second is, I think that people move back and forth on that spectrum given that the circumstances that they are put in. So depending on...
Given on the issue, too.
On the issue
and on their district.
I can't trust a person like that.
Yeah, well, but the thing is, that's basically everybody.
Here's the thing: should we be looking for people who can lead, or are we going to look for people who, if four people come from her district or his district or their district, and like this is what I mean. This is the stuff we have to like. I think we spend too much time talking about this shit. Now,
this is my job.
You're the one who brought
it
up.
No, it isn't. No, I don't think. No, no, no. My point is, like, for example, we know people who are connecting, who are going to be connecting later this month or next month about, you know, a small group of people, but from a nascent organizing for the Palestinian human rights. Incredible stuff. Some bigger movement things are happening, and they're not just looking at assessing candidates and looking at electoral math. Because that's what you're... Now, do I agree with your argument about does another Val Longhurst...
That's not their job. That's not their place in the movement.
What's this now?
Yeah, if they're the Palestinian... Like, they should be organized for Palestine. They shouldn't have to be considered...
What I'm saying is, does it make more sense? Because you don't just do electoral politics.
No.
I mean, and you don't either. You know, I don't know what the percentage is.
I mean, that's our main thing.
Yeah, I think...
Family Party, not as much for DSA. I mean, obviously, that's a big part of what you do, but it's not your...
Yeah, I would say it's probably the biggest thing, but definitely less than 50%. Yeah. Like,
because you still do... You do trainings.
Yeah, but it's all related to governing. Like, our core thing is governing power.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Because that's what I'm thinking is, like, there's more...
Yeah, and absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like, the thing about government is responsive. Apart from those key people that are leading, either on the good side or on the bad side, most governments are responsive to the conditions on the ground and the movements that are pushing them back and forth. So that's part of it is, like, yeah. So, like, I think a lot of the most important work that happens has nothing to do with what I do, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, it happens like the people that are doing the union organizing, the people who are doing the Palestinian organizing, it has to do with the people
mutual
who are
aid.
Yeah, and even if you look at it like, and maybe like the DSA might not, maybe it's 50-50 or not even that, and maybe a Working Families Party, it's more like sort of building towards political power in some fashion. You could still concentrate your resources.
Yeah.
You know, or you don't have, like.
I agree.
Because that's the other thing too is.
Which I can't talk about publicly. Because,
of course. Well, yeah. what I'll say
But I will
is,
let you know, we do have conversations about how we concentrate our resources.
Yeah. And again, I'm not even saying this because I don't think you do this. Uh-huh. I'm just making, like, I'm just making the point as I was making before where, you know, I feel like people are spinning their wheels on a lot of these. And I feel like that there are, you know, even if it's a purely political. Even if all the training and all of the work and the organizing around canvases and all of this electoral stuff, even if it's pushed behind three people, it's going to be more effective than seven people or eight. It's just the way that it works. So do we look to do that?
So I guess like all sort of agree, you know, kind of piggyback on what Carl said and said that, you know, say that, you know, even unofficially, you know, not all endorsements are necessarily going to come with like equal resources, and I think that that's probably a good thing, you know, depending, but you know, not just about, you know, both about political conditions and, you know, how much of a movement leader someone is, you know, and that's okay, and I do sort of agree that, like, with Rob, that, like, yes, I think that there have been there have been some L's taken and some endorsements that shouldn't have been made. But I think, like, you know, I think I would rather, I'm willing to take those, a few of those L's and, like, get a little bit of egg on my face, you know, as opposed to, like, having a block that's really too small to do much. Because I feel like, you know, it's funny, like, I don't think that we've really been at the gold standard like, you know, Minnesota has been as far as, you know, passing really a lot of good progressive legislation. But I mean, I would say, like, if you look at the past 4 years, especially last year in 2023, I mean, I think that there's enough there that's been done that I think at least at a state level, I think it's pretty defensible, like the sort of broad net strategy that's been cast. I don't know if I necessarily, I don't know if we'll necessarily cast as broad of a net. You know, I don't think that we have done that at the local level, and I think that, you know, where organizations like WFP and like DSA, you know, can really, you know, have the power to elect someone a lot more unilaterally, you know, versus like at the state level or federal level, you know, you kind of have to operate more so in coalition with, you know, people that may not be, you know, Democratic Socialist or may not be as progressive as WFP. So, I mean, you know, I don't care, like, you know, yeah, people can, like, you know, criticize, like, you know, some of the missteps that we've made on Twitter, and that's okay. And, like, that's, like, I'm not saying that you or anyone else is invalid for doing that, but I think that there's been enough accomplished in the last 4 years since these two groups have started playing ball in Delaware that I just don't know how you can look at that as anything less than at least a mild success.
I don't. As a matter of fact, I look at it as a great success. Yeah. So the reason I'm even thinking about this kind of stuff is because I do think it matters. Like I do think that, as I said, with like Working Families Party too. Like when people start talking about like talking shit on you, you know you're doing something right. So like, yeah. Like I look at it like a success, and because I think supporting a candidate or throwing your organizational weight behind it, you know, should mean a lot. Not just like, oh, is this you know, is this this or that? We're gonna get one here. Maybe they'll and the other point I'll make, and then maybe we'll let Shanae fucking close us out. Is it the default setting? Carl and I were talking about that through like the corporate amendment process, where like how quickly are people going to fall back to the default setting? Because I feel like that happens quite a bit, and that happens when you don't have an ideological project that you're thinking about. It's very easy to be like, you know what? Just go back to factory settings. Just do this, because I don't know what to do. And so, you know, I just wish, you know, that's my only point, is that we've focused these resources because I do think they are success. I mean, I'm a member of both. I wouldn't, you know what I mean? I wouldn't fucking do this if I didn't. So, Shanae, last word from you, whatever you want. You know, I was going to ask you to make a statement about the Palestinian stuff, but make a statement about whatever you want.
I guess it will always be related to the Palestinian stuff. But I know we talked a lot about like protests tonight and making endorsements and how we should be more selective. But I think as I think about that, like earlier today, I was having a conversation about people who are bought and paid, because I know Jamal Bowman in New York, what happened with him losing the election. And it made me talk about like campaigns being bought and paid by corporations and large institutions. So for me, it's like, how do I stay true to myself in this? When everybody and everything in this whole system is rigged and ran by corporations and money and funds. So it can be hard, but like, you got to think about why you're in it. And stay true to your character and your morals, because it can get murky. It can get murky. People will pull you and act like you're your friend and offer you things. And the next thing you know, you're pulled in. So that's all I really have to say.
Some of the establishment Dems in Delaware are some of the nicest people to me ever.
Yeah, they'll be nice to you. So a lot of times people think playing nice is like the way to go, and that's the politically correct way to
go. Right, they try to
like
draw you in with the
Yeah, they'll draw smile. You with the nicing and the smiles, and the whole time it's conniving, evil, and tricking you, and you have to give up your character, who you are. And I don't want to do that intentionally.
Nope. Petty tyrants and thieves, folks. Watch out for them one way or the other. I can't watch out for them, so you have to. Thanks, everybody. Jonathan, Shanae, Carl, thank you very much. I feel like most people kind of understand what I'm trying to do in here. You know, some people don't. But if you like it, you know what to do. Patreon.com/TheHighlandsBunker. I mean, hit the thing. If you want to hear that bonus content from the Steve Wood episode, you're going to have to hit the thing. So just do it now, and then you'll feel better. Because, you know, you've wanted to pay for it the whole time. Thank you for coming in.
Of course, anytime, every single time.
Yeah, thank you for having me back.
It takes a special tack to get Carl wound up. Sometimes I can do it. You got to drink though, because he gets mad when you drink. He's a teetotaler. He's like the Molly Hatchet. Well, she was like the temperance one.
Oh,
right?
The one who would like go into the saloons,
yeah,
and smash everything,
smash
yeah.
them up.
Yeah,
yeah.
Molly very Hatchet. Similar in a lot of ways to that.
He's brought an axe here on many occasions. Yeah, you know what? You know what they just said in Bolivia? The whole populace. They tried to pull some stuff, but the whole populace, you know what they said? Left is best.